At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Justin Klein and Steve Peasley stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers. This is InvestTalk, independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. This is our Thursday, January 11th, 2024 edition. And because Luke just felt like it, he decided to pop in and join the show today. So welcome back, Luke.
Happy Thursday, everybody.
Happy Thursday. Just one more day for everyone before we head out into the weekend. But we are moving through the second trading day of the new year, the first full trading week of the new year. And there has been a lot of market gyrations, a lot of market news. We had a CPI number that came out today, and that will be something we will be touching on. But most of this show is not just talking about the latest economic data points. It's really going to be about you and your questions. What is on top of mind for you? That's job number one. And then it's our topics that we bring to the table. And we're going to give you our perspective, developed with over 20 plus years of investment experience, and hopefully give you some actionable material so that you can take that home, apply it to your investment process, and consistently make good decisions with your money. Now, we're going to look at the market performance today as well as run down some show topics, but right after we answer our first caller question now.
Hi there. I have a question about Advanced Micro Device, AMD. I have a very small position, but I was thinking of selling that, and I'd like to get your thoughts on that. Thanks very much. Bye.
Looking at Advanced Micro Devices, $240 billion market cap. Growth has certainly slowed as of late. 2023 full year fiscal earnings so expected to be down 45% once they report earnings in the fourth quarter. This year, earnings are supposed to bounce back to $2.95, but still below the 2022 earnings level of $3.50 per share. The relative strength right now, Luke, 96. So it's certainly in a strong uptrend. He owns it. Are the valuations so stretched now that maybe you should think about rebalancing?
Yeah, well, you know, AMD obviously is a household name, I think, for most people. It certainly benefited from the boom in tech towards the end of last year. I think that overall, what you probably expect to see in the market is kind of a shifting away, especially in a name like this where cash flow is down over the past year. You said earnings is rebounded, but certainly from a valuation perspective, it still seems a little bit overvalued to me. It's at a price to book of 5, certainly not as overvalued as some names within this space. But I think overall for this sector, I would take it as an opportunity to trim away and rotate into something that would kind of benefit from the secular changes that we expect to see this year.
Yeah, and this is a company that does have its hand in a lot of different areas of technology, a lot of hardware products, PCs, gaming consoles, data centers, industrial applications, automotive applications, etc. So that's the positive here. It's a very diverse business. But as you said, Luke, it is trading at a pretty hefty multiple. You're looking at enterprise value to EBITDA about 58 times. That's very, very high. Price to sales around 11. We talked many times that when you pay more than 10 times sales, it's very rare that you actually come out ahead in the long term. So it's certainly trading at some elevated prices. And remember, historically, the chip industry goes in boom and bust cycles. And if there continues to be a deceleration in the overall economy and lower demand for physical products, you're going to see inventory swell, overcapacity build within this industry and for AMD. And so, 2016 wasn't long ago. 2016, they lost money. And while recently they've done really well, this is certainly a good time to at minimum, rebalance your position a lot lower. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 40 minutes. Our main focus point covers this topic, the risks ahead for 2024 and how investors can manage them. And that's what it's all about, managing the risks that we know are there and some risks that we don't know or aren't really paying much attention to. So there are geopolitical risks, financial stability risks, and the big question is, what is your investment time horizon? And that also impacts how you should prepare for these risks as well. Now, we have some voice bank questions to get to. One is in regards to the new Bitcoin ETFs, as well as AGM, Federal Agricultural Mortgage Corporation. So that's what's on the docket for us today. But let's pivot over to the market as a whole. And it was a decidedly down day overall. Small caps certainly underperformed. And look, we continue to see a very, very choppy environment in 2024 so far.
Yeah, that's true. The market was down, I think, significantly more intraday than it ended up finishing. The S&P 500 was only down 7 basis points. But overall, the big headline news today was about CPI coming in slightly hotter than the consensus expected. Cleveland's Fed's Mester, who's a voting member of the committee, said that they expect, you know, that March will be a little too early to cut rates, that there's still some work to do, as evidenced by December's CPI, but that didn't change the market's opinion. The chance of a rate cut in March now priced at 70% versus 66% before the print. But for me personally, my eyes are going to be on the start of essentially the start of Q4 earnings season tomorrow. By February 9th, we expect 75% of the S&P 500 to report earnings. So not so much concerned about what the earnings levels were in Q4, but certainly we'll be looking to see if the 2024 consensus of 12% growth holds after those numbers come out.
Yeah, that was an interesting move in the markets. The fact that, as you said, the month over month increase in CPI was a bit higher than expected, yet the expectations for a cut in March actually increased a little bit. So the market continues to kind of call the Fed's bluff on their higher for longer verbiage their message to the market. So it'll certainly be interesting to see if that comes to fruition or not. The dollar was down a little bit today. You had gold up a bit. You had oil, I believe that was up a bit as well. I know you said after hours we fired on the Houthis, correct?
Yeah, we're just shooting rockets, some jet rockets and offshore Tomahawk missiles. So certainly that can be something that affects oil and energy prices tomorrow. Who knows which way?
Yeah, after hours, oil is up a bit. So that is increased tensions to some degree. That could just be a short-term little news headline or something that sparks a broader escalation of tensions within the Middle East. Only time will tell, but that is certainly bringing the oil price higher, which has been, you know, under pressure, kind of in that low 70s range for a while now. And what happens with oil and energy prices more broadly will certainly feed into the inflation numbers and thus Fed policy. So that's something to watch as well. Now, as we go to a break, let me remind you to check out our new InvestTalk Classroom series. And Luke and I talk about how to prioritize your savings, talk about the 40-30-20-10 rule, as well as can you contribute to your 401k and IRA as well. Now, the phone lines are open, waiting for your questions at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future.
Would this be an opportune time to get into annuities?
Everyone's situation is different.
Get your thoughts on CRM, Salesforce.
And so are their questions.
And I was just calling for your assessment of Blackstone Incorporated.
To get your take on QE.
Ticker symbol LECO.
Just wanted to get your opinion on
J.P. Morgan.
InvestTalk hosts Justin Klein.
You know, I'm okay paying a fair price for a very good business.
Steve Peasley.
It's a very well-run company.
And now Luke Guerrero.
EBITDA growth is significantly higher than its competitors.
Are ready to provide their unbiased answers. Each podcast is unique, and you set the agenda.
I will.
Hey, hi, Steve.
24/7, rain or shine, InvestTalk is made better by the power of you. Call 888-99-CHART. Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many variables. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve, Justin, and Luke. Just a quick question on dollar cost averaging in today's market. I have about 30% of my portfolio essentially in cash at the moment and want to get that back into my diversified ETF portfolio, a mixture of small, mid, and large caps. And just curious if you would dollar cost average that over a short amount of time, say the next 10 weeks, or would you dollar cost average that on a more lengthy timeline, say 20 plus weeks with the current market conditions? Just love your input on that in general, and we'll look forward on the podcast. Thanks so much.
Well, the numbers always say the sooner you get the money in, the better chance you have to perform, because over time you want to have your money in the market, especially if, what if you get a market surge over the next 6 months and you take 20 months to get that invested and you only have about a third of it in over the next 6 months. And then maybe the market charts chug sideways for a year. So, you know, it's one of those things where kind of have to go by the numbers. You probably want to do it sooner rather than later, especially because, as I've been saying time and time again recently, is the markets, they're not cheap. They're not expensive. They're around fairly valued. It's not like you're throwing money in at prices that make forward-looking earnings or forward-looking returns look poor. They don't. They look about average, which is obviously much better than cash. Anything to add there, Luke?
No, I think that pretty much covers it. I would also just say that if you have an opportunity to put more money in the market and you set a time frame, say I want to do it over the next 10 weeks, market's dynamic. That doesn't have to be the exact time frame over you do it. Things can change. There could be what you foresee to be a unnecessary rally. There could be a great contraction next week, in which case maybe you want to put more money in then. So I think your point is correct in that by the numbers, just getting exposure to that equity premium as soon as you can is great, but you don't have to stick to your plan if things change, because things are always in flux.
Yeah, you can have a 20-month time frame, and then if the market pulls back 10%, what do? You maybe accelerate that, right? Put a quarter of it in right then, once you get a 10% pullback, and you can do things like that. So that might be a better way to go, so that you can, I don't say time the market, but be ready to allocate when there is a bit more fear in the market. Right now, not a whole lot of fear. Now let's squeeze in another caller question from 888-99-CHART.
Hello, InvestTalk. Mike from Texas. Calling about Huntsman, ticker HUN. What are your overall thoughts on adding Huntsman to hold for the next 5 to 10 years in my portfolio? Thank you for your honest and unbiased feedback.
All right, looking at Huntsman, this is a small cap name, a $4 billion market cap. And the trend of the business is pretty rough here, Luke. The last four quarters, each quarter, year over year, sales were down over 20%. So there's certainly a downtrend here. You're seeing that in earnings, expected to only make 54 cents last year once fourth quarter earnings come in. That's down from $3.13 in 2022, and only supposed to make $1.15 this year. And those estimates are coming down as well. So forward looking, you're talking about a 20 multiple on a name that's shrinking. I think there's a good reason why, there's a lot of reason there why this has a relative strength rating of 22 and it isn't a clear downtrend. Do you see anything positive about this?
Well, I mean, aside from everything you just said, they also have quite a bit of debt, about a 58% debt to equity ratio. I'm trying to take a look at their margins, but it's being a little slow to pull up. I mean, their margins, it looks like, are not great relative to their peers. I mean, their pre-tax margin is about 5.3. I don't really see anything that I like, to be honest.
Yeah, the operating margins right now are at about 2.6%. The five-year average is around 7%. And if you look going back all the way to when they IPO'd back in 2004, those operating margins were, kind of in the 5% to 7% range. So what you could say, the best argument is there is a reversion to the mean here that will get back to that 7%, those 7% margins and earnings will rebound dramatically. But like you said, they have a decent amount of debt on their balance sheet. The trends are not great. And I would want the technicals to kind of confirm that there is a turnaround in profits. And I'm not seeing that yet. So I definitely would hold off on this one. All right, we're going into a quick break. So give me a call now at 888-99-CHART.
Your objective is to work hard, plan well, and achieve financial freedom, right? You're in luck because Justin Klein is here now, ready to take your finance and investment questions. Call 888-99-CHART.
Now, our main focus point concerns this topic, the risks ahead for 2024 and how investors can manage those risks. Now, it's hard to accurately predict the future. It's a fool's errand, really. And perceptions of the risks in the market are often, in some ways, priced in. And I think that is something most average investors don't understand, is that they point to all these things, these risks that are on the horizon, and especially if people know about it, it's probably reflected in the price. So while a lot of people go black swan hunting, right? What is that next boogeyman around the corner? What is that next 08 crisis? While that's fun and interesting, oftentimes it's, once again, a fool's errand. So, Luke, there's a lot of noise out there. And the question I think a lot of our listeners are asking is, how do they filter through that noise and kind of reframe their mind so that the risks don't feel as daunting as many of them make it out to be?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. I think one thing that my mother always told me that's applicable to not just finance, when you feel like the world is melting down, she always says, I've lived through this too. And by that, I mean that there are always risks out there. Mm-hmm. There's always potential for conflict. There's always a threat of supply chains breaking down, as we've seen, even when we thought we were comfortable in 2019, right? That's a risk that nobody saw coming.
Markets climb the wall of worry.
Markets climb the wall of worry. I like that. But I think the most important part is exactly what we always stress, which is to have a disciplined, consistent approach and to structure your portfolios in a way that weathers the storm. So we have been impressing upon clients and our listeners for a while to look for companies that have low debt on their balance sheets. That's not because we think there could potentially be, or rather, it's not because we're certain that there's going to be some crisis that would necessitate companies being put through stress tests, but it's a way to prepare for that and to prepare your portfolio for the worst case situation.
And markets have been around a long time now, especially equity markets. And you just go back 100 years, think of all the things that have happened over the last 100 years, from world wars, multiple regional wars, pandemics, financial crises, et cetera. And still, equities have returned about 7.4% after inflation. Right, in real return. And that's some perspective that you can have when you start thinking about the current risks in the world. And it's pretty obvious what they are. We obviously have two wars in the Middle East and in Eastern Europe with Ukraine and the Gaza conflict. You have a commercial real estate problem, both locally and potentially worldwide. You have inflation that is elevated and no one really knows exactly where that's going to settle out or where that long-term trend is going to be. But you have secular trends in China in many ways that are reversing, you know, the globalization trends that are reversing. There are large deficits here in the U.S. and abroad, and a potential recession on the horizon. All those things are fairly well known. But if you think back, and you just recently, March of 2020, when you had the COVID crisis, there was a lot of uncertainty, but it was pretty clear that once you got through the initial phase, that while there'd be some changes, overall, the economy structurally didn't move much. And asset values bounce back. And that's really what you have to think about. It is when you see a headline, first question you should ask yourself is, does this change the underlying structural cash flows of the business and the industry? And not just over the next 12 months, it's the next 5, 10, 15 years. Because in any given short period of time, that's what a lot of people focus on in recession, Luke. It's like, oh, there's recession, you got to get out of equities, and there's going to be this huge risk. The reality is most recessions bring modest volatility in equity markets and don't change the doesn't change the long-term trajectory of earnings for businesses. Yes, near term, sure. But if you look through those volatile periods, you have a consistency of longer term earnings trends. So what I always tell clients is, yeah, there are risks, but those risks are actually opportunities. Most people don't understand that when those headlines hit, they should get excited, reframe their mind to, oh, a recession is bad, or volatility is bad, or a credit event is bad, to, no, those are opportunities. That's how everyone talks about investing like Warren Buffett. They think it's value investing that got him where he is today. No, a lot of it is seeing through the crises and allowing those crises to be buying opportunities for him and his funds.
Yeah, I think the perfect example is that some companies like NVIDIA have no room for error. They're priced in such a way that they have to hit sales expectations, whereas China, everyone expects it to be down. They just have to have some sort of positivity for markets to react in a good way.
Yeah. You have to understand that these things oftentimes are priced into markets, sometimes way too negatively and sometimes way too positively as well. All right, now we're heading into a break, so I'm ready to take your questions now at 888-99-CHART.
Have you been using the Mint app to manage your finances? If so, you are going to be making a change because Mint is shutting down and the Mint people want you to transfer to their Credit Karma product. But hold on, there is a better alternative, Monarch. That's right. Monarch is the modern way to manage your money. With Monarch, you get clarity, confidence, and peace of mind for your finances. You can track all your account balances, transactions, and investments in one place. And Monarch even has a tool that allows you to easily import your data from Mint. Speaking from personal experience, Monarch's intuitive design, features, collaboration tools, customization, and constant product improvements are far above any other financial budgeting app. And it's ad-free. Monarch eliminates what was previously stressful, confusing, or overly time-consuming. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, cash flow, net worth, and more. Plus, create custom budgets, track progress towards your financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when they go to monarchmoney.com/investtalk. That's monarchmoney.com/investtalk for your extended 30-day free trial. Go to monarchmoney.com/investtalk.
This is Invest Talk, the radio program and podcast dedicated to helping you achieve financial freedom. You may be a regular listener. You may even have called a few times. But if you've never called, what are you waiting for? The phone lines are open, and Steve and Justin would love to hear your questions right now. Call 888-99-CHART.
On the next Invest Talk, we'll look into the story highlighted by this topic. What is the total cost of owning an ETF? Now, the total cost of owning an exchange-traded fund, or ETF, is roughly split into your holding costs and your transaction costs. But fees are only a small part of the equation. That's tomorrow, but now let's play another caller question that came in earlier to 888-99-CHART.
Hello again, Invest Talk. I had a question about a news article I just got done reading about the new Bitcoin ETFs that will become available. It looks like the SEC just approved a spot Bitcoin ETFs, and then it also shows that some fund managers or asset managers like BlackRock, Fidelity, ARK Invest, and WisdomTree may be putting out their own version of their fund. So my question is, you guys talk about, you know, being well diversified with our investments. What's KPP's plan regarding cryptocurrency or these Bitcoin ETFs? You know, do you guys plan on having a small percentage yourself, or what about maybe not for you guys, but what about other investors like myself who don't actually have a financial manager, but you know, are interested in the space? Do you think that this could be, you know, something good long term, or is it just too soon right now to tell? I'm really curious what you guys think. And then also, if you guys do know of certain tickers that we, I guess you guys can't really recommend stuff, but if you could recommend which one of these that I listed would be maybe a good to look into further. So I'll listen on the show, and I appreciate all your guys' help as usual.
Now, as most people know, the SEC recently approved, as the caller mentioned, spot Bitcoin ETFs. Now, I think Justin and I kind of share this opinion in that for most investors, this doesn't have a place in their portfolio in a way that you would think of traditional asset classes. And for me, and Justin, maybe you can chime in as well, I don't see, if you want to hold a Bitcoin, why you would do it with an ETF. You're essentially just layering on additional fees rather than going to the market yourself and holding it in a cold custodied wallet. So I think that and you certainly see it in what the SEC chair said recently, a lot of investors are going to see the letters ETF and think that they're protected in the same way as a fund that is regulated under the Investment Companies Act of 1940. And because of some of the issues within the crypto industry, issues putting it lightly, I think a lot of investors are going to purchase this, assuming that they're safer than they truly are.
Now, I think the best argument, Luke, for these ETFs owning Bitcoin through these ETFs is actually going to be owning them in tax-deferred accounts, IRAs, 401ks, which you can't really do within, like you said, a cold wallet. Now, I do think that it is something people should consider, but probably not now. Mainly because we've seen this act before. Hype train around a Bitcoin ETF, was it BITO? B-I-T-O? That's the Bitcoin futures ETF. And remember, when did that come out? That was right near the peak in 2021. And it came out around $40 per share. Now it's at 22 and change. And so historically, timing-wise, this tends to be a terrible time to buy. Now, I do think there is the fact that it was approved is very interesting to me, because I've always been in the mind that the government isn't going to allow others to take control of the currency. They want to be able to print the currency, enact an alphabet soup of policies to kind of paper over issues within the treasury market, like what's happened recently with the BTFD. And I didn't think that they were going to do this, up until recently. I kind of thought there was a decent chance they would. It's pretty clear that they've taken the stance now that they rather have a piece of it and the ability to kind of have some control as opposed to completely banning it and not making any money off of it, right? It's pretty clear that lobbyists have kind of come in and pushed them to get this to happen so that the BlackRocks, et cetera, in the world can open this up. And I think long-term, it's about fund flows, and this opens up fund flows, potentially more fund flows into this space. So I do think there is some merit to this, that owning this long-term. But like I said, Luke, historically, when these watershed moments happen, it's usually at a time where it's not a great time to get in. Let's just say that. And historically, Bitcoin and other crypto has been a big proxy for liquidity. So there's volatility is going to be huge. And as you said, Luke, there's for a lot of people, it's not appropriate because of that volatility. I don't know. Anything to add beyond that?
Yeah, I think investment horizon matters. Yeah. And if you are approaching retirement and somebody is pitching you to allocate a large percentage of your portfolio to a Bitcoin ETF, mm-hmm. run.
Yeah.
Because the volatility and the massive swings and the time periods over which the price can stay depressed has the potential to wipe some people out.
Yeah, it'll the volatility there will certainly rip your face off if possible, and it probably will. And I do think Bitcoin does have a lot of value, but I think a lot in ways that are different than what most people think. A lot of people use it as like an off-ramp to the dollar, off-ramp to the traditional financial system. And the reality is the better value actually comes in those countries that have far worse systems than we do. Think of South American countries that historically have runaway inflation, whether that's Argentina or whether that's Zimbabwe. You know, those are kind of the traditional proxies for runaway inflation. And I think those type of countries that have reckless governments, reckless central banks, this can be a good off-ramp. But there are risks involved with that. There are security risks. And going to your cold wallet point, Luke, you know, security risks are certainly there. And that's one of the reasons why I think they may have jumped the gun on approving this. I think there are a lot of security issues with, think of one entity. How are you going to make sure that wallet of the ETF is secure itself, right? It's easy to store physical products and secure it in a warehouse, et cetera. But digital, there are other challenges involved. I think that there are certainly risks here. I wouldn't go overboard, and I wouldn't do it today or anytime soon.
Yeah, I just and to add one more thing, I think for me, the dangers that I see to the system from the approval of something like this is just the derivative products that are coming next. And so you have something that is highly volatile that now you're going to probably in the near future have some leveraged bets on. Mm-hmm. And leverage plus volatility never ends well.
Yeah, especially for the average investor. You know, they chase returns.
For retail,
they chase this
it never ends well for retail. Example.
Yeah, and just look right now. Bitcoin rallied very strongly into this news, and it got the news that it wanted. This is a perfect example of like price to perfection. And what has the price of Bitcoin done since this announcement? Basically nothing. It's pretty much flat. So those that bought, you know, that bought it for this move, you know, and typically when that happens, it's probably actually going to reverse lower. And you can easily see a buy the rumor, sell the news type of event here. Yeah, very interesting story. We're certainly going to be following it. I think there is some value in Bitcoin, but probably less than most people realize. And it's going to be extremely correlated to liquidity. And as we know, liquidity does ebb and flow. Now let's pivot over and talk a bit about uranium, Luke. And uranium price over the past, really since the Ukraine war, has doubled to the highest level since 2007. And utilities are really the main driver of prices as of late. And that's because they bought 160 million pounds of the commodity last year. That's the highest annual volume since 2012. And the market just continues to get tighter and tighter. Not just here domestically in the U.S., where reserves of uranium held at U.S. utilities have been declining since 2016, but also in places like the European Union, whose inventories have steadily declined since 2013. A lot of that's because many of them thought they were going to shut down their nuclear plants. Now with the Ukraine war, many of them are reversing. And so that the nuclear power plants continue to actually pick up steam. You know, they're opening a bunch of them in China. I think they're planning to open over 50 over the next 15 years. And I don't see this trend really reversing, Luke.
Yeah, I don't either. I think that early on in the quote-unquote green revolution, a lot of people focused on wind and solar. And I think over the next decade, people are going to focus on the combination that makes sense given the electrical grid and the demands on the electrical grid at any given time. And nuclear is a big part of that. And I think the most interesting thing is that, you know, at this point, just given the cost of operating a reactor, the input material is not the biggest cost. So the price of uranium going up hasn't really affected these power plants that much, but it's getting to a point where it might. And I think the
demand
other interesting
is what
part
we
about
call
this,
inelastic.
It's inelastic for now. But yeah. I think the interesting part of this to me is that given that Russia holds about half of the world's enrichment capacity, the world moving towards a energy grid that includes nuclear is certainly going to keep Russia in the fold of global discussions going forward in a way that maybe they wouldn't have been post-Ukraine invasion.
And but you could say over time, if prices continue to rise, maybe that incentivizes Western countries to build out enrichment capacity, right? And
you know,
I think
it certainly could, but I think that one of the issues there is that the nuclear is, it's a dirty word. People are scared.
Yeah, but I think over time, it's pretty clear that it shouldn't be. And as with everything, sentiment of the public ebbs and flows. And it's certainly ebbing back towards, hey, nuclear is not as dirty as it used to be. Actually, this is a pretty good option in a world where we're trying to decarbonize create a stable power grid, which we know you can't do generally with wind and solar. And so as a baseload power, it's hard to do much better. Now, there's a lot of upfront costs, and that's why we say the demand is inelastic, because the costs have already sunk. It's building the plant, and the actual uranium is a very, very small percentage of the total cost of operating and building in the life of the plant. So that's why it tends to be inelastic demand. So, we banned, the House passed a bill to ban Russian imports in December. And the next step will be for the Senate to vote on that as well. So be interesting to see if that gets passed. But the trends remain positive for nuclear and the price as well. Let's go to Sid in North Carolina, who wants to look at Salesforce.
Hi, Justin and Luke. Thank you for taking my call and thanks for reading the message the other day. All prayers for Steve and the family. So thank you. Yes, I want to discuss CRM. I do have this in my portfolio for more than 2 years, maybe. And I won't be surprised if you say that this is very expensive, because I could see that. I'm at 20-25% of profit. It is around 1% of my portfolio. Do you suggest to hold this or sell it off? I'm sure you would not agree to add more at this price. So please give me your inputs. Thank you so much.
are looking at Salesforce, $262 billion market cap. So certainly a mega cap company. And it was one of the first big SaaS companies that really made it big. And they continue to perform, at least on the earnings side. Earnings this year are supposed to be $8.14. That's up from $5.24 last year. And that's a 55% increase, Luke. And those earnings projections continue to go higher. And that's why the price continues to move up. Relative strength 94. So the trends are certainly good. I see resistance on the chart closer to 300. So I still think there's some more upside. It's at 270 and change now. So another 10%, I think, upside before there's some major resistance. But I think the question for this listener, Luke, is that an area to sell some of it, all of it, or none of it? What do you think?
Well, I think Salesforce, I mean, their cash flow is improving over the past two years. Their profitability is back on an uptrend. You know, I think the old saying is nobody ever went poor taking profits. So I think if you feel as though it's a good time to do it, then it certainly could be. I agree with you that it's still got some room to run. I probably wouldn't buy any more, but the valuations are still pretty reasonable relative to their five-year averages. So I think he's got some time. I think he can make a decision to trim a little bit, but for now, I would hold on to it.
Yeah, I would hold on, trim around 300, 320 in that range. All right, thanks for the call. Now we're heading into our final break, so give us a call now at 888-99-CHART.
The stock market is constantly changing, and serious investors know that they need to modify their portfolio assets to fit the times. And now, with more than 50 million downloads, Justin Klein and Steve Peasley reaffirm their commitment to providing unbiased finance and investment guidance here on InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART.
So before we talk about our last talking point, we're going to go to Tier from San Jose, who has a question about Franco Nevada. Do you hold it or are you looking to buy it?
Oh, I'm looking to buy it. I got a recommendation from your show, and so I did my research. It seems like it's like... Hello?
Yeah, we're here.
Yeah, I'm looking to buy it. It has like very decent ROE, ROA, a little bit higher PE than the other industry companies, but conventionally it's been higher. Right now it's like lower compared to its PE ratio, zero long-term debt. Everything looks good. I'm aware, I read a lot about the Cobre Panama mine shutdown. So the only thing one of the things I'm worried about is the growth opportunities over the next 5 years. So I would love to hear about your analysis and take on it.
Well, the Cobre mine is a big issue for them. It is an asset that brought in about 200 plus million in revenue in 2022. So a company that does about $1.5 billion in revenue annually, is that's significant. So there's certainly an issue there. And this is a good example of, hey, is this asset impaired that they own? Obviously not the whole company is impaired because of it, but a significant asset for them would be. Or will it be resolved eventually? And the answer for typically within these Central and South American countries, where a lot of mines are, is that, you know, you grease enough palms and, you know, you talk to enough people and they figure it out. Because there are jobs at stake in places that have limited economic opportunity. And so the workers want to work and the government wants the business. And it's just about kind of squeezing more things out of the company, whether that is better pay, better rights, et cetera. So I think you have to also look at this too. Yes, its PE is higher than the others within its industry, but this is a streaming name. You can't compare this to a normal mining company. So you have to compare it to other streamers. And so I think there's good value here, and this is the type of opportunities you want to pick up, but there are certainly risks still involved as well. Now, lastly, let's talk a bit about AI. And Luke, everyone's talking about AI changing the world and how this is the next big innovation that's going to improve productivity. Well, the last major one was really the internet. And between 1992 and 1999, non-residential investment in the US rose by 3% of GDP per year. But now, CapEx is actually in reverse, and in many instances, negative. So does this mean that these companies don't see a lot of value in AI and thus they're not investing?
That's a good question. If you recall, I said this a while ago, that one of the good ways to get exposure to AI is to not necessarily try and swing for a home run with one of the companies that's trying to create it technologically, but think about the companies that are going to benefit from implementing it in their businesses, right? And what you've seen so far is over the next couple years, a lot of companies don't expect to spend that much money on AI. Yeah. I think you just got to think about... Well, other than the tech companies, but other companies, you know, 5% of chief executives expect AI to have a significant impact on their business within 1 to 2 years, while 65% see it being a big impact in the next 3 to 5. So I think what you've seen with CapEx is probably just a secondary effect of where interest rates have gone. The cost of financing has become more expensive, and therefore the pie in the sky, if you will, technologies that are eventually going to help your business just take second fiddle to what's going to help your business today. Do I think that's going to be a long-term trend? I don't. I just think that for now, companies see this as a down-the-road improvement, and it probably will be.
And like most interesting new pieces of technology, people run ahead and dream big about their impact. But the reality is their impact doesn't typically affect the near term. It's usually more of a 5, 10, sometimes even 20-year time horizon before these have strong, consistent real-world applications. And just think of personal computers. Right? They were rolled out in the late 70s, early 80s, and you know they weren't widespread for most people until the late 90s, early 2000s. And so I think AI will be similar. It will build over time, but it's not going to be, not going to revolutionize the world in 1 or 2 years. I'm Justin Klein with Luke Guerrero, and this completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And be sure to rate and review us on iTunes as well. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights.